Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 3, Chapter 6, Creation of the Universal Form, Text Number 6. Hiranmaya Sapurusha Sahasra Parivatsaran Andakosha Uvasapsu Sarva Satpo Pabrimhitaha. Sarva Satpo Pabrimhitaha. Hiranmaya. The Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, who also assumes the Virat Rupa. Saha. He. Purusha, incarnation of Godhead. Sahasra, 1,000. Parivatsaran, celestial years. Andakoshe, within the global universe. Uvasa, resided. Apsu, on the water. Sarva Sattva, all living entities, lying with him. Upa Brahmitaha, so spread. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The gigantic Virat Purusha, known as Hiranmaya, lived for 1,000 celestial years on the water of the universe, and all the living entities lay with him. Please repeat. The gigantic Virat Purusha, known as Hiranmaya, lived for 1,000 celestial years
on the water of the universe.
And all the living entities lay with him. Purport. After the Lord entered each and every universe is the Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, half of the universe was filled with water. The cosmic manifestation of the planetary systems, outer space, etc., which are visible to us, is only one half of the complete universe. Before the manifestation takes place, and after the entrance of Vishnu within the universe, there is a period of 1,000 celestial years. All the living entities injected within the womb of the Mahatattva are divided in all universes with the incarnation of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. And all of them lie down with the Lord until Brahma is born. Brahma is the first living being within the universe. And from him, all other demigods and living entities are born. Manu is the original father of mankind, and therefore in Sanskrit, mankind is called Manusha. Humanity in different bodily qualities is distributed throughout the various planetary systems. The gigantic Virat Purusha, known as Hiranmaya, lived for 1,000 celestial years on the water of the universe, and all the living entities lay with him. Om Vishnu Vraya Krishna Pristaya Bhutai Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paskyadhyade Siddharma. Third canto is describing things which are already beyond our experience. In other words, we hardly can conceive of what one celestial year would be. I don't even remember what it is. I think it's something like, at least the demigod year is 6 months of our time is equal to one day in the life of some demigods. But I don't even know if that's a celestial year. But taking that 6 months of our time, that means in 1 year of our time, 365 days, is equal to 2 days in the life of a demigod. But actually in the higher planetary systems than that describes Sahasra Yuga Paryantam, Ahurya Brahmano Vidu, Yatra Yuga Sahasrantam, Teho Yatra Vido Jana. That 1,000 ages taken together is the duration of Brahma's one day. In other words, 4,300,000 times 1,000 times 2 is the duration of Brahma's day and night. And if you multiply that by 365, and you multiply that by 100, then you get 311,040,000,000,000 years is the life of Lord Brahma. Which is, for our, we can't really imagine if we were going to live for 311,040,000,000,000 years. If we can live to 100 years old, we're considered to be quite fortunate. And if someone makes it to 120, they get into all the newspapers. But Brahma, who lives for 311,040,000,000,000 years, no one even takes it. And today, or not today, well, in his day, it's his birthday. Oh, yeah. Happy birthday, dear Brahma. Yeah, right now it's his noontime, and it's his birthday. He's 50 years old now. He's already an old man. And he's worried because he only has another 150 trillion years left to live. Life is almost over for Lord Brahma. And there, as I mentioned before, in one moment, a Mahavishnu, which is in Amesha, is approximately 1/6, I believe, or 1/8. Then I think 6 or 8 Brahmas are come and go in one moment of Mahavishnu's life. But we're going to live a long time, don't worry about it. We got plenty of time to waste around here. We're young. In other words, here the description, of course this is just one verse, but it's meant to put us into some kind of perspective, put ourselves in some kind of perspective so we can understand what's actually going on. We've heard, for instance, that it is said that an intelligent person, he thinks that he's going to, at every moment, he's going to die. And a fool thinks he's going to live forever, at least within this body. Of course, we all will live forever, but not in this body. But this is meant to actually bring this in some kind of practical perspective, the fact that we're not going to be here for a long time. So we can make our determined effort with the little time that we have here to make some progress in Krishna consciousness, put things in the right perspective. And as it says here, it gives us some background of what's going on, something we may never in our existence even have any experience of. Of course, we have experience of it, but we probably don't remember. Even people who go back and pass regressions and try to find out who they were, they generally don't remember being in Mahavishnu's body for 311,000,000,000,000 years. Oh yeah, I remember now. I was really tired and I could really get a lot of rest. That was pretty cool. 311,040,000,000,000 years we were there and no one ever woke us up. We probably don't remember being in either Mahavishnu's existence or Garbhadakshaya Vishnu's existence. We hardly remember what we did yesterday. But this is meant, at least from the Bhagavatam's point of view, to put us into some kind of perspective that we may think we're the controllers around here, but that control is not very much manifested when the whole universe is being annihilated. Where do we run? Our insurance policy at that time, everyone's insurance policy runs out. And even if it's valid, who are you going to collect it from? So there's a time of annihilation of the whole universe. There's a time of annihilation of at the end of the yuga. And there's a time of annihilation of our individual bodies. So there's no security in any place in material existence. Although that's what we're always seeking, is some kind of security. We make, especially in Kali Yuga, we make so many elaborate arrangements with our bank balance and our house and the locks on the house and our insurance policies and whatever. We buy organic food, whatever we do. Try to get some insurance to more or less karshati, to have a better struggle against the illusory and the material energy. But ultimately, there is no insurance for anyone. Even Lord Brahma, he has to die. So what to speak of ourselves? Hiranyakashipu, he did the best he could, standing on the tip of his toes for 120 years of the demigods, not eating anything, not drinking anything, after the ants ate and the moths and the other living entities ate his lungs, he wasn't even breathing. He was simply existing in his bones, surrounded by an anthill. So, nothing he could actually do. I mean, who can execute such an austerity that he did? If we believe there was a person called Hiranyakashipu. Of course, there are a lot of little Hiranyakashipus running around. But there was one time a big Hiranyakashipu. And in order to become immortal, he underwent such a severe austerity to get the favor of Lord Brahma. And indeed, Lord Brahma came and gave him some benedictions. He wouldn't be killed in day or night on the land or the water or the air. He wouldn't be killed by any man, beast, or demigod, etc., etc. 100 benedictions. But he developed an acute stomach problem and died in spite of all of the benedictions he received. Intestinal problem, I think it was. So, what austerity, what are we going to do in order to preserve our life here for any longer than we're destined to stay here? There's nothing we can really do. Maybe we can live a little more sattvically, we can wash our hands before we eat, we can chew our food better, we can do a little exercise, we can eat what's necessary, not too much, not too little, and maybe preserve our life a short duration more if Krishna desires. But ultimately, it's only beneficial if we're utilizing it for Krishna consciousness. All these descriptions in the third canto, and indeed in all the other cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, are meant to put us into a little bit of awe and reverence. Although in Kali Yuga people don't like that term, awe and reverence, because we want to be more spontaneous. We want spontaneous love of God. Oh, Krishna, I love you. But we have to take Krishna seriously in order to actually love him. We have to see who we're actually loving. The residents of Vrindavan, they're fully Krishna conscious, and therefore they're spontaneously attracted to Krishna because they're actually aware of Krishna. But we're not aware of Krishna, so how are we going to become spontaneously attracted to someone we're not aware of? And we're not aware of Krishna because presently, Bhayam Dvitiya Vinaveshatasya Ishadapatasya Vipario Smriti. We're not aware of Krishna because we're competing against him. We want to be Krishna. And therefore, we have some imagination that, yeah, maybe Krishna, maybe there is a Krishna. Maybe, you know, some of this makes sense, so there's some possibility. But ultimately, as far as I can see, there's so many other people I'm competing against to become, somehow or another, prominent. We may not claim ourselves to be God because we're rather humble. We just claim ourselves to be the best or feel ourselves to be the best or better than others. And what is that based upon? My material circumstances. I'm more intelligent, and I'm more powerful, and I'm more attractive, I'm more influential. But what I'm identifying myself is not my real self. It's my external self, it is being manifested by the material energy and being moved by the will of Krishna. So I'm taking credit for something I actually don't deserve to be credited for, and judging myself against others on a basis which is not really factual. It may be factual that my body, the present body I'm in, is more intelligent, more powerful, more influential, more attractive than other bodies, but no one's their body. So we're just comparing ourselves to more or less cars or machines that we're in, saying that my machine is better than your machine. But it's not even our machine. The machine, Yantra Rudaya Rudani Maya, the Ishvara Sarabhutanam Rideshe Arjunatishati. Brahmayan Sarabhutani Yantra Rudani Maya. That the Supreme Lord, He's directing the wanderings of all the living entities who are seated as on machines made of the material energy. Tam eva sharanam gacha sarva bhavena bharata tat prasadam avapnoti stanam prapsti shasanam. That surrender unto Him in all respects, O Arjuna, because by His grace you can obtain transcendental peace in the eternal abode. So we can surrender to the Super Soul. We can let Him direct us. We can surrender. We can dovetail our desires with His desires, and therefore He'll be able to direct the material energy in a spiritual way. He can turn the material energy into the spiritual energy in order to fulfill the activities of devotional service. Or we can decide to accept other desires coming from our minds, reject Krishna's instructions, fulfill the desires of the conditioned nature we've acquired since time immemorial, and simply watch our bodies work under the modes of nature. In any case, we're not the doer, we're the observer, but we can decide to observe material activities performed by the body under the direction of the illusory energy, or we can decide to follow spiritual activities dictated by Krishna under the spiritual energy. We can observe either one of them. Simply it's our choice whether we want to engage in devotional service or we want to engage in one of the three modes of nature or a combination of them. In any case, we're simply the observer and the desirer, and the rest is carried out by Krishna either through His spiritual energy or through His external energy. Although they may not seem to us, or even to anyone, especially to anyone else, much of a difference. But under the spiritual energy, we become more aware of Krishna and everyone and everything as they're related to Krishna. And under the external energy, we become more or less bewildered, thinking ourselves to be the enjoyers and controllers of the illusory energy. So, that's our choice, what we want to do in this material energy, either surrender to Krishna, tam eva sharanam gacha, sarva bhavena bharata, tat prasadam param shantim, stanam prapsi shasvatam. Or we can surrender to the illusory energy and imagine ourselves to be the doers and the enjoyers and compare ourselves to others, other living entities, and think that we're actually making progress towards becoming the Supreme. So in that state, where is there any question of being Krishna conscious? We're not going to become Krishna conscious. We're going to be under illusion. And even we want to make progress in Krishna consciousness, we do it by surrendering to Krishna's instructions. It's not a question, I just feel like loving Krishna today, and therefore I'm going to follow His instructions out of my spontaneous desire to do so. Yes, that may be there, but actually what Krishna wants us to do is to love Him, of course, but love will be shown by following His instructions. And that way we'll actually feel something, gradually develop our feelings towards Krishna. But if we want to pretend that we already are conscious of Krishna when we're not, and that we do our activities spontaneously with not regard to what we're actually asked to do, or what the mission of Krishna is, just like Prabhupada would emphasize, Yari Deka Tari Kaha Krishna Upadesh Amar Agai Guruhana Tari Desh. That God Himself has come as Lord Chaitanya, and as Krishna when He came 5,000 years ago, most people ignored Him, thinking, who is this coward boy? Why is he pretending that he's so important? That was a constant theme. Even when Krishna would constantly defeat Jarasandha 17 times, and still Jarasandha would never take Krishna very seriously. Didn't matter that Krishna would kill millions and millions of warriors and he'd watch them all die, and he'd only be the only one left, and he'd be arrested and then released. Still, he wouldn't accept Krishna as very important. When Krishna kidnapped Rukmini, then Jarasandha was the first one to tell all the soldiers who had come, all the warriors, the generals, who had come there on behalf of Shishupal for his wedding. He was the first one to say, you know, let's go and get that Krishna. Who is he anyhow? He's just a lusty coward boy. Lusty coward boy who just killed millions and millions of his soldiers, but he was only put into the category of a lusty coward boy. Balaram and Krishna defeated all the soldiers that tried to chase after him and Rukmini. Balaram came with soldiers. They defeated all of Rukmini's soldiers. And yet, Rukmini and his friend, the king of Kalinga, and Balaram was playing chess with Rukmini. They just criticized them. They're just coward boys. What would they know about fighting or gambling? In other words, when Krishna was here, most of the people who were demons, we're not supposed to say demons. It's politically incorrect. The asuras, that all they did was criticize Krishna. It didn't matter what he did. He lifted up Govardhan Hill with left pinky, hold it there for 7 days a night. And the conclusion of Kamsa is, who is this Krishna? What is his power? Just because he lifted one pebble Govardhan Hill. What's his power? Why should we be afraid of him? Just because he defeated one harmless water snake, Kaliya. So whatever Krishna did, he was subject to criticism. And similarly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he comes as Krishna, and he hides his identity, Chana Avatar. But just by his chanting Hare Krishna, thousands of people become devotees and convert other people into devotees, spreads the Hare Krishna movement, at least all around India, within a very short period of time. And still, even to the today, they simply consider Chaitanya Mahaprabhu a sentimentalist. Just like Prakashananda Saraswati was considering Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just a sentimentalist. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to discuss with Prakashananda Saraswati and the other Mayavadi sannyasis something about Krishna consciousness and exhibited the effulgence of 10 million suns, what was the conclusion of the Mayavadis? They watched him do it and they said, oh, that's very nice, he's Narayan. But we're all Narayan. Big deal. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that he was exhibiting unlimited effulgence, and they all appreciated, oh, very nice, he's a sannyasi, he's Narayan, Om Narayan Namaha. We're also Narayan, but he's just a little brighter than we are right now. Of course, eventually Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by his arguments, by his discussion, he convinced them that he was not an ordinary personality. They eventually could understand that he was actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But still, we don't find people took him so seriously, because in this world, we don't expect people to take God very seriously, because that's what this whole world is about, a place where no one takes God seriously. And what to speak of God's representative? Sometimes we become disturbed. I'm God's representative. I'm speaking Krishna consciousness, I'm actually representing God, and people are ignoring me. Well, you're lucky they're just ignoring you. Could be a lot worse. Haridas Thakur, a pure devotee, they caned in 26 marketplaces. So we prepared for that. If someone took a stick and hit us once, we'd call 9/11. Right? Prahlad Maharaj is fed poison. Now that I've studied so much, I worked so hard, I chant Hare Krishna so much, now I'm a prema bhakti, and what's the first thing I do? They give me prasad with poison in it. How is it that Krishna is in control? Can I get a decent meal around here? No one has to expect that this is the world, this is the existence where people are against Krishna. Whatever he does, they're going to criticize. One time one devotee was complaining to Prabhupada. He said, Prabhupada, whatever I do, they criticize me. So Prabhupada said, well, they criticize Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also. So the devotee thought, well, maybe Prabhupada didn't hear me. They said, Prabhupada, whatever I do, all I can get is criticism. So Prabhupada said, well, they criticize Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also. He's God and they're criticizing him. So what can we expect? Of course, we should do the right thing. Sometimes there is good reason to criticize us. Not that I'm a devotee, whatever I do is divine, and therefore no one has any right to criticize me. But if we're actually following the instructions of Krishna and his representatives to the best of our ability, then we should, tolerate the criticism that may come. If not, see if it's valid and see if we have to change something. In any case, here we find that we have to develop a little bit of reverence, that we don't know either Krishna or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We may have had a little contact with Srila Prabhupada or his representatives, but we can't think we know everything now, and therefore I've been here in the Hare Krishna movement for at least 20 years, and I should automatically be on the spontaneous platform of love of God. And when I walk into the temple, I should faint like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did at Jagannath Puri when he saw Lord Jagannath. Why is it that Krishna is so unkind to his devotees that after so much service, I'm still not attracted to Krishna? Because we have to become patient and we have to follow the rules and regulations of devotional service and try to give up our materialistic conceptions of life and our materialistic desires and activities. And then gradually, by following regulated devotional service, that taste will develop. It doesn't come automatically. But we have to understand how great this creation is, how Krishna is in every atom, and how big the universe is, and how many universes there are. We have to develop this little bit of reverence and not be so much caught up with our temporary conception or our temporary existence here, and try to judge everything by our very limited conceptions of things. Then when we see what time, the expanse of time, how it's, 100 life in 1 second of Lord Brahma's life, we're going through almost 1,000 of our births and deaths, then we won't be so caught up. How is it that 40 years I've been in the movement and I'm still not a prema bhakti? How long is it going to take? Well, if it took 1,000 births, that would only be 1 second in Brahma's life. And he'd feel himself very fortunate. He lives for another 150 trillion years, and he's not sure if he's going to become a prema bhakti during that time, if he has enough time. Of course, our Brahma is fortunate because he's already on the stage of Brahma. Of prema, because he was Haridas Thakur. But there are many Brahmas and many other universes. They can go through 311 trillion, 40 billion years of practicing sadhana bhakti and not make it up to the platform of prema. Or they may even fall down from their positions. So we should not be so impatient to think, oh my God, it's such a long time. Why is this process so slow? I'm so sincere. Etc., etc. Something must be wrong with Krishna or his process. It couldn't be anything wrong with me. In other words, as explains here, that our existence is, well, the existence of the universe is quite extensive, time is quite extensive, the arrangements that Krishna make are quite organized, quite consistent, and we should feel a little secure, at least, in the fact that Krishna actually is properly taking care of everything. We don't have to check the newspapers every day to find out whether or not, you know, Krishna is properly taking care of the activities of this material world or not. Whether people are being treated fairly or not fairly, whether people are actually getting their karma or they're not getting their karma. We can be rest assured everyone is getting exactly the karma they deserve. Nothing's happening accidentally. There's nothing unfair going on. Krishna's, even during Chaturmasya, when Krishna's asleep, he still makes all the proper arrangements. He's not asleep at the wheel of cosmic time. So then, in that mood, we could try to chant Hare Krishna, actually calling out to Lord Krishna and his energy with some desire to please engage in your loving service, some humility, some faith that there is a Krishna, there is a Srimati Radharani, there is something called loving service, and I should experience what that's about. And the only way I'm going to be able to experience that is if I actually call out with some sincere desire to experience it. So that's what we're doing. Whatever we're doing is meant to try to help us develop a sincere desire to obtain Krishna consciousness. That's all. Whatever it may be, because how do we know what really Krishna consciousness is? We can hear about it. We can hear about how the devotees are, you know, whatever type of bhava bhakti they're experiencing, whether it's virakta, anushnuya, bhakti paration. No, actually, that's right. That's the first one. Bhakti. No, no, I'm not thinking of that one. Virakta anushunyataha, ashabanda smukanta, namaganaka siddharuchi. That's bhava bhakti. Detachment, always engaged in devotional service, feeling some anxiety, eagerness to become Krishna conscious, having hope of becoming Krishna conscious, having attachment for the holy name, liking to hear about Krishna's pastimes, wanting to live in a place where Krishna had his pastimes, or where there's service is going on. So these are symptoms of developing Hare consciousness. And what to speak of the symptoms of vibhava, anubhava, sattvika bhava, vyabhichari bhava, and what's the stayi bhava. So what to speak of developing these things when our sika or our hair is standing on end and we're shivering, not due to the cold, because the weather dropped a few degrees, but due to the intense ecstasy. So these are symptoms of love of God. These are the things that we like to experience, but what is our experience? And what can be artificially experienced? But if we want to experience those things, then we can make gradual development through the stages of sadhu sangha, bhajana kriya, anartha nivritti, nishta, ruchi, sakti, asakti, and then bhava. And then there's possibility of experiencing these higher realms of devotional service. But let's first come to the platform of actually anartha nivritti, getting rid of some of our unwanted habits and conceptions by proper performance of sadhana bhakti, and then some of the realms of devotional service. Bhaktya mama vijananti yavanyas chasmi tatvataha tatomam tatvato gyatva vishite taranantara. One can know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead only by devotional service, and when one is actually absorbed in such devotion, then he can enter into the mysteries of my understanding. So we have to progress through sadhana bhakti, sadhu sangha, sadhana bhakti, anartha nivritti, nishta, ruchi, asakti, and then some of the mysteries. Gradually some of the mysteries will be reveal to us. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
It's mentioned in the purport that the Virat-rupa is synonymous with the Virat-rupa.
In the sense that he manifests it.
He manifests it.
Obviously, Virat-rupa, the way we generally look at it, is the whole cosmic creation, which is mostly the stem of the lotus flower that he's manifested from his navel. So in that sense, it's him, because everything, every part of it, he's manifested from his energy.
Oh, here it is. Hiranmaya is in the synonyms. The Gautama Sara Vishnu, who also assumes the Virat-rupa.
Yeah.
So, they're synonymous.
Not exactly, simultaneously one and different.
Right. So, the Virat-rupa is something that is an expansion of his energy.
Yeah. Everything comes from...
Because Prabhupada mentions in a previous purport that the Virat-rupa is not a spiritual form because it's not eternal, it's temporary. But the Gavadaka Sai Vishnu is recognized as an eternal form of the Lord.
Well, yeah, well, he's eternally appearing and disappearing. Yeah. But the material energy is eternal. Forms it takes are temporary.
Yeah. Oh, and it's manifest sometimes and sometimes not.
Yeah, so now, but the energy is eternal. It's just the forms are always changing.
Yeah.
But Garbhodakshay Vishnu, he doesn't change. He's eternal. He's eternal. He's an incarnation. Anything else? Yes. You'll have to ask Krishna, I don't know. I never got his their itinerary. And so far Krishna hasn't really asked me, so I couldn't really tell you. He hasn't even asked me for my opinion. So you gotta ask him. But it's all there in the books. I mean, everyone gets their destination as a combination of what we're desiring and what we're doing. But usually we're doing so many things, we have so many desires, that the only person in the material universe who probably has a better idea is Yamaraj, but even he gets it wrong sometimes. At least, Krishna is the only one who could actually give us a definite. But if we want a nice destination, generally the idea is that we should try to do something. I mean, if you want to find out some of the opinions of Krishna, or of his devotees, where people go who are not quite 100% favorable, you just read Chaitanya Bhagavat. It's a lot of explanation of criticizing devotees and making aparas, what some of the effects might be. So you can read Chaitanya Bhagavat. Gopala, or even Chaitanya Charitamrita, Gopala Chapala, what happened to him. Or Ramachandra Khan, or Ramachandra Puri. So there's a lot of explanations. So a lot of people that you can find out about.
Sometimes people are critical 1 year, but then change their minds the next.
Yeah.
Become devoted. There's a Giridhari Rupa. He used to work in a fruit process. He used to throw rotten vegetables at the grapes.
Yeah. There was one sannyasi, and he used to, whenever he saw the devotees, he'd come over and take one of the books and rip them up. And I believe one day he got one of the books and didn't rip it up. He took it home, read it, and became a devotee. So you never know who you're dealing with. Yes. Well, the question is whether we're considered human beings. The demigods are part of the 400,000 species of human beings, but whether we are or not.
The demigods are counted in that 400,000.
Yeah. And there are a lot of varieties of demigods, just like there is a lot of varieties of human beings too. Some of them are quite elevated, some of them not very elevated.
You know, just on that point of being offensive, isn't there that verse in the Bhagavatam that describes how different personalities meditate on Krishna, and even out of envy or anger, they eventually get some form of spiritual benefit from doing that?
Something, yeah. Shushupala emerged into Krishna's effulgence, which is... not recommended. Yes.
What are the external bodies made out of with the demigods? I mean, water.
Same thing. Earth, water, fire, air, and ether. But we have to understand when we say earth, we mean relatively solid energy. When we say water, that which the energy that holds things together. Fire is effulgent that transforms things. Air is what moves things. So the air, water, fire, air, and how they act in the higher planetary systems, they consider earth, water, fire, air, and ether, but they may act differently. Just like Prabhupada would say, that the sun, in the sun god, we can see the sun planet. It's not like it's some other energy. It's fire. But they have fiery bodies there. But obviously their bodies are not exactly the same as our body, otherwise they couldn't survive in that. It's not like you look at them and they're just, wow, this guy's on fire all the time. They may have bodies, but they're just adaptable. They can live on the fire planet. They're mostly made out of fire. But that doesn't mean they're on fire all the time. The fire, you know, when Kunti, when the sun god came to Kunti Devi, when she called him, wasn't she, my God, this guy's on fire, call the fire dog. No, he appeared a very attractive demigod, but his body is mostly fire. That's like our body is mostly water. But it's not, you know, fire is a very broad category. It can also include many things within it that transform other objects. Yes? Well, the expansion of Krishna has varieties of expansions, beginning with, first he has Svamsa as a coward boy in Vrindavan, then he has Tere Katma Rupa, which is divided into different categories. But expansions are generally either plenary or partial, so some of them are, for instance, Vivinangsa or Svamsa. The Vivinangsa means partial expansions and Krishna's full expansions. Diparcha eva hi dasantaram abhyupetya. So the full expansions are all Krishna, but just manifesting different potencies to different degrees. And then he has partial expansions of living entities. But as far as incarnation means they have a certain purpose to fulfill. And there's varieties of incarnations, such as Yuga avatars, Leela avatars, Manvantaras, and there's varieties. Also, there's Shaktivesh avatars. So they all have different purposes fulfilled for Krishna's mission. So they're empowered for different purposes. So it's nice being here. We look forward to seeing you again. Thank you for your kind attention. And Hare Krishna. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.